What up? Welcome to Do This, Not That, the podcast for marketers. I'm Jay Schwedelson. Let's dig into some tips and some randomness. We are back for Do This, Not That podcast presented by Marigold. And I cannot stand when marketing stuff, tactics, tips, whatever, gets circulated and recirculated and put on important websites and influential people talk about it and the information is not true, because I fall for it sometimes and then I avoid doing certain tactics and it's very annoying. So I want to share a couple tactics that are just, I think, blatantly not true. And the reason I decided to do this episode is because I saw this study that came out just now. This study came out and it kind of blew my mind. So this is the first myth buster, and then I have two other ones. So the first myth buster was about posting on LinkedIn, and the other ones are not about LinkedIn. So the study came out from this company called Metricool, okay? Very well-established company. And they studied over 577,000 LinkedIn posts. And what the study was all about was, if you put a link in your LinkedIn post on a company page, on a personal page, and you put a link in your post, will that cause that post to have less circulation? Because what everybody believes, what I believed, is that if you put a link to something off of LinkedIn, you know, a YouTube link, a link to some downloadable piece of content, something, right? You take them off of LinkedIn, that LinkedIn doesn't like that, and it will decrease the circulation because the algorithm doesn't like that, that your post won't go anywhere. And I fundamentally have believed this forever. And so I saw this study and they said, they studied 577,000 posts across 48,000 different company and personal pages. I mean, I don't even know how they did that. That's a bananas amount of whatever. And here's what they found. They found that posts with links have higher engagement, 13% higher engagement when a post has links in it. This is like, are you kidding me? That is wild. And it also not only had higher engagement and interactions, but it had 4.9% more views than posts without links. So after I saw this, I'm like, what? This is like the opposite of everything. Because what I do is sometimes I put a link in like the comments because I'm scared to put a link in the post. So when I saw this study this week, I said, all right, screw this. I want to try it out on my own page. So I went on my own page. I put up a post and I put a link in it. And I expected it, the post, to do garbage, like go nowhere. And it did really well. It did really well. I had a YouTube link in there. I'm like, look at this. Who knew? Now, does that mean that you should put links in every post? No, it doesn't. Because I think that links in posts, now that I'm really thinking about how it all works, I don't think that the algorithm and LinkedIn are penalizing you for putting a link in your post. What I really think about is that the post itself is penalizing itself. What do I mean by that? People are on LinkedIn to be on LinkedIn, right? They're on LinkedIn to see stuff on LinkedIn. They're not really on LinkedIn to be taken off of LinkedIn. So when you put a link in your post and you're trying to get people to go off of LinkedIn, I think that the reason that we all feel like it hurts our performance is because in and of itself, it's taking away from what people want to be doing. So I'm now very interested to keep testing this, but if it's one of those things that's out there, it's like, oh, I can never do this. Garbage. When you hear something you can never do, that's the thing that you want to test. So another one of those that's been circulated a lot lately is related to email marketing. It's this idea of you should not resend to non-openers anymore. Meaning, let's say you have a newsletter. You send out your newsletter. Like I send out my newsletter on Thursdays. Okay. And let's say I get a 40% open rate on the newsletter. And then on Sundays, we send out an email to everybody who didn't open it on Thursdays, right? We send out to non-openers. Now, there's all these articles, all this stuff that gets circulated now saying, no, that's a thing of the past. If you resend to non-openers, you're going to be considered spammy. It's going to hurt your email deliverability. And there's so much good, correct data out there now that dispels that myth. You 100% should be sending to your non-openers. Why? Let's before we get to the deliverability piece, why? Because when you actually send to your non-openers, overall, your net click-through rates, the overall amount of clicks that you get when you combine your first send and your second send, go up by about 15%. Because you're reaching people on your list who want the thing that you're sending. They just missed the first email. It's not that they ignored the first email. They missed it. They are busy. Okay, so the critical thing when you resend to non-openers is you need a different subject line. Like what we do is, you know, send out the regular newsletter, whatever it says, or the promotional email. And then the next one would be like, oops, you missed it, subject line. Or you scroll past this one. Something in the subject line that's very different than the first one. Okay, and I like to acknowledge the fact that the person missed the first one. This applies to newsletters, promotional emails, consumer, B2B, it doesn't matter. And then send it out at a different time of the day. Stop treating non-openers and openers the same way. Clearly, they didn't have time for it at that moment. So your non-opener resend, if you send your regular one out at 10 a.m., send it out at 3 p.m. to non-openers because you want to try to cater to a different mindset. But 100%, it is, when people say it hurts your deliverability, you get more unsubscribes, it's so not true. You get like a fraction of a percent more unsubscribes. So it only is bad, actually, if you use the same subject line twice. Don't do that. So that's another myth. And then the last one is this idea of repeating content. Everyone is so scared to repeat content on social media or in their emails, but especially on social media. You know, people think, oh, on our company page or on our personal page, on Instagram, on LinkedIn, on Meta, whatever, we posted that. We can't post that again because we're going to seem repetitive. We're going to seem like we have nothing to say. Are you kidding me? Why don't you go to Gary V's page? You know, Gary Vaynerchuk, right? All he does is repeat his stuff and he crushes it. And it works so well. Listen, on average, on social media, regardless of platform, you're only going to reach about 7 to 10% of your followers that on any given piece of content you put out there. And I would argue that that's even pretty high. I think it's less. So nobody's seeing it. So in my company, what we do is we have a 6-month marker. We look at content on a rolling cycle. Anything older than 6 months that did well, we are reposting that every single day. And that's what we're doing. So if you think you're being repetitive, you're not. You're just being ridiculous if you're not actually posting again. All right. Speaking of ridiculous, before we get into the ridiculous portion of this podcast, which is truly ridiculous, I want to let you know this podcast is exclusively presented by Emma from Marigold. Ooh, here we go. An ad read. Tune it out. You're bored. Whatever. No. Emma's awesome. It's an email setting platform that you could use for your retention, your loyalty, your all your email marketing stuff. It is awesome for business, for consumer, small, medium, large. What are you doing? You need a great email platform. This is what I use. And for listeners of Do This Not That only, you can get 50% off of Emma for 3 months. Come on. All you got to do is go to jschwedelson.com/Emma. So it's my horribly long name, jschwedelson.com/EMMA. 50% off. Come on, check it out. All right, let's get into Since You Didn't Ask. Well, this is a ridiculous topic, but everything I'm talking about is ridiculous. So I saw that. So the new season of the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders thing came out on Netflix. Great. I'm just getting started on it. Great show, by the way, but that's not what I'm here to talk about. And it's a great show. It follows the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders making the team or not making the team. It's great. Anyway, there was a lot of controversy last year because they talked about how much they got paid. And they were only getting paid like $15 an hour. And they were doing all this work late at night, whatever. And it was all over the place. So now this year came out. Now the new season's out. They got a 400% increase in salary. They're making $75 an hour and all these appearance fees and all this stuff. And they said for veterans, people who've been on the team more than 1 year, the cheerleading squad, they can make $100,000 to $150,000 a year. I'm very happy for them because I felt like they were getting screwed. But then, of course, I had to go down a rabbit hole. And I said to myself, I wonder how much people make on all these ridiculous reality shows are that I watch. I want to know how much they make. So I had to do some research. And I know if you actually care about what I'm about to say, then you are in the fraction of 1% on this earth because this is really stupid stuff. All right. So on The Bachelor, any of The Bachelor shows, which of course I watch all of them, The Bachelor, The Golden Bachelor, The Bachelorette, you name it. Do you think they get paid? Well, here's the answer. So the person who is The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, the main person, they get paid about $100,000. What's up? Just to be that person. But all the other people, the doofuses that you're picking from in terms of, you know, who who the bachelor or bachelorette is selecting from, out of the 30 people, they get paid nothing, zero. And they even have to buy their clothes and all this stuff. So that kind of stinks for them. Now, Survivor, they do all get paid. So the contestants on Survivor make anywhere between $2,000 to $3,500 per week. But that's terrible because you're not eating and whatever. So that's not good. The Real Housewives, I know this is important. If you are a new cast member, you make anywhere from $60,000 to $100,000 for a season. And veteran cast members make anywhere from $300,000 to $1 million per season. Look at the information we have here. Dance Moms, $1,000 per episode they make. 90 Day Fiancé, they make $1,000 to $1,500 an episode. So what does this all mean? I have no idea. I really don't know what it means. And the sad part is a lot of these people, this is like what they do for the rest of their lives. They'll go ahead on The Bachelor, then they try to squeeze out money afterwards. I don't know. What it means is this is not a good career. That's what it means. Don't do that. But hey, you're here. I appreciate you. If you leave this a review, then I would think you're very cool because it helps to circulate the show. Or leave it a comment. Even better, if you're on Spotify, leave it a comment. I'll comment back. We can hang out. We'll be BFFs. And you're awesome. Thanks for being here. Later. You did it. You made it to the end. Nice. But the party's not over. Subscribe to make sure you get the latest episode each week for more actionable tips and a little chaos from today's top marketers. And hook us up with a 5-star review if this wasn't the worst podcast of all time. Lastly, if you want access to the best virtual marketing events that are also 100% free, visit guruevents.com so you can hear from the world's top marketers like Damon John, Martha Stewart, and me. Guruevents.com. Check it out.